welcome back again to Dratton Drake Veterinary Podcast. All right, so we, obviously you guys can tell from the last episode, and if you haven't listened to it, please, we were able to convince Dr. Cruz to come back. And so, you know, obviously, you know, the typical format of the previous episodes are usually about an hour or hour and a half sometimes. Trying to keep it a little bit more short and sweet, you know, because our typical drives are when we listen to podcasts, it's, I think the 15 to 30 minute kind of segments are a little bit more digestible. And so, again, Dr. Cruz, thank you so much for coming back today. Short snippet on those who didn't get to that episode. Obviously, we first met in vet school. You were my professor. You're also the advisory for my public speaking club, Ross Talk. And you've always been a mentor for a lot of veterinary students, but now professionally, you have a service where for the veterinary community, you really help with their mental health. And essentially, mental health coaching is kind of what you've labeled it. Since we last spoke, we kind of introduced this idea, this mantra that you've mentioned to me a few times, is this idea of feel better, think better. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Absolutely. We use our thinking mind all the time. You know, it's always there. And we're very aware that we're having a lot of thoughts and a lot of voices and all of this happening at all the time at once. What we don't realize is that very connected to those thoughts that we're generating, there are this set of emotions that are congruent with those thoughts. So if we're having a wonderful conversation, you know, and I'm praising you for like, thank you, Dr. Tam, for having me. I remember your very successful career as a student, now as a dad and a business owner. You know, those words, they come from the thoughts, from my memories. And the associated emotions are like, I'm really proud. And this is like, this is great. This is right. There's always the thought and there's always the feeling. And I know in psychology, and without getting into a lot of details and being very respectful for therapists, counselors, etc., I have found that whenever we want to help somebody feel differently, we want to put the thinking mind on the side at first. And we want to connect emotionally. And there's a lot of books, you know, emotional intelligence, basically, from Daniel Goleman, and a lot of his publications and many people following his work. It's really that. It's that capacity to feel, you know, empathy, compassion. So I use this feel better, think better as my biggest philosophy. And probably the simplest way to explain this, go further, is just to give you an example. I was coaching this very young vet student at the moment. I think she was in second semester, and she graduated several years ago. And basically, she was telling me, really from the bottom of her heart, a very distressful situation that she was having at the moment. You know, it was like heavy, very, very heavy. So I need to match her emotions. Of course, she was crying. She was just really in a lot of tears and a lot of distress. So what I said, I'm going to take the same intensity of emotions, but I'm just going to flip the emotions. And I said, I admire you. I admire the situation. Just the fact that you're here, alive, talking about your story, and thinking of ways of feeling better, it's amazing. So I immediately that it matched her emotional intensity, just from the other angle. Now she was really stressed and anxious and frustrated. I just met that same intensity, but with love, with compassion, with respect, with understanding. And once she was able to relax a little and felt better, then we started talking about, okay, now let's bring logic and reason. Now let's bring the analytical mind, because yes, you need to make a plan. Yes, you need to address the situation. You gotta be your analytical mind at the top game. So that's the concept when we feel better and we allow ourselves to feel and acknowledge the feeling, the thinking that comes afterwards is smoother, okay.
So
more clear.
It seems like what you're saying is you first need to acknowledge the root of your emotions. And then from there, only can you then shift the perspective of your actual thinking. So
absolutely.
With this example, and it seemed, you acknowledge, oh, wow, you're feeling all of these things.
Yes.
Now that you've acknowledged it with her, it then went into, okay, well, how about this perspective instead of thinking it from this way?
Yes.
Awesome.
And to me, it took me several years to really learn that, because when I was still teaching at Ross, and a lot of students would come to my office and they would do this very deep unloads of their emotions and their situations. A lot of the times, I was able to just listen and be very present. Also, at that time, I didn't have the training that I have now, and the emotional resilience that I have, if you will. So I would go immediately logical, you know, like, oh yeah, the situation, you gotta go talk to the brother. You know, it's like as if they were.
You want to fix it right away.
Exactly. And that's the total opposite of what the coaching business is all about. It's not about advice. It's about getting somebody to acknowledge what they're feeling, whatever it is. And then from that place of acceptance, saying like, okay, well, there's a reason why I'm feeling this. We may not know what it is. We may not figure it out. Let's just use this emotion and they start flipping it around. Let's use that same intensity, but we just flip it. All the energy that we were using of, oh my God, oh, I hate Alfred. How come he made a podcast before me? All those thoughts, we just turn them around and we flip them. So, and that's the essence also of the coaching. If I'm allowed a little bit of a marketing,
sure.
A marketing push it's a simple process. When we simplify things and we put the thinking mind on the side for just a little bit, and we simplify how we're seeing our emotions, then, oh, the clarity of thought that comes, the answers come out.
That's great. So one thing I'm curious, and I think I might have an idea of what is, what happens when people are apathetic? And so, I mean, I guess I'm very curious to know what your thoughts are, because, you know, if the concept of every thought or expression has an emotion behind it.
Yeah.
So, you know, do you believe that people can be apathetic, or do you think it's just that they're masking emotions more so than anything else?
Both. It's funny because when I speak with my wife a lot, she says like, "Why cannot be emotional in this meeting, because it's just all male in these meetings and all these male scientists, and I have to keep it no emotions." And I very respectfully, and I said, "Remember that if even the, you know, like the guy, the dude that could be the biggest scientist in that table, if that person is in very serious and kind of withdrawn and kind of just listening, it's still showing emotions. It's a very neutral emotion. You know, the dude is not like me that is talking all the time and fast. He's like, or is not, you know, yelling at everybody, but it's kind of that middle ground that is also an emotion. And it can be a very slippery slope, because a lot of what we guys do, you know, putting ourselves in the, on the, on the spotlight is that we say, I don't share my emotions. And we withdraw and we just shut down. That is showing the emotions of, I am feeling a lot, I'm just not expressing them. It doesn't mean that I'm not feeling it. That's where the concept that we spoke on last episode of seeing thoughts and emotions as the two sides of a coin is very useful, because then we don't give more fuel to the mind to just believe that we're just thinking and thinking and thinking. No, it's like, yes, we're thinking and thinking, and at the same time, we're feeling and feeling. And it doesn't really matter what happens before or after. It's just this concept that allowing whatever emotion to be felt, to be expressed, even if it's just to ourselves, you know, that's most of the times. If I'm going to see somebody and I'm having, you know, I didn't get a good night's sleep, or, you know, I have a 16-year-old daughter, which for parents out there, you know what parenting teenagers can do to your temporary sanity. then I got to admit to myself that, well, I'm really tired. I'm a little bit cranky. And that acknowledgement allows me to say, okay, I don't want to feel that way. What other things can I feel? Right. So I started kind of self-coaching me to switch those emotions.
Yeah. So what do you feel, or from your experience, what do you think with people who don't allow themselves to acknowledge these feelings? It's kind of a two question from both extremes. Yeah. What do you think the consequences are versus those who actually do put the effort in? Where are the benefits of being able to then kind of self-reflect, acknowledge the feelings behind them, and then move forward from it?
Yes. Oh, that's a great question, Dr. Tam. I would use one word, freedom. Actually, two words, freedom, authenticity. If something is happening to me and I hold it to myself, I think in psychology, they call it amplification. That is that thought, you know, we start ruminating, not in the ruminant kind of way that we bring food out and chew it over and over, is that thought literally gets bigger and gets bigger and gets bigger. So when we don't allow ourselves to feel and recognize that, we are basically becoming a pressure cooker. Because that bottling, that's another term in counseling, I think, that bottling of emotions will eventually explode. And then once we explode, we tend to use that, oh, I'm sorry, yeah, I know I should have not done that, but it was just that the moment is like, no, it was not the moment. That bottling up, that suppression of emotion has been happening for a long, long, long time. It's just, we cannot really hide them. And I remember one of the classes for the vet prep class that I used to teach, I was explaining this concept and I used to tell them, just for a moment, imagine that you are in seventh semester, right? So I start planting this illusion, this imagination, and then you can see that it kind of go up. And then at the middle of the story, I would say, but the reality is that you fail in fifth and you cannot continue. And then I started going like this, and to the point that they were all like deer in headlights. And I would bring them back to say, this is
diabolical.
Not true. But this is just really to show you what we do with our thinking mind a lot of the times. So freedom and authenticity, that's what we gain when we give that gift to ourselves of really just opening up and say, this is what I feel. This is how I'm feeling this. I may be right, I may be wrong. It's just really that. It's really authentic.
All right. So when you talk about kind of these emotions and then tying them with thoughts, you've mentioned like the simplification,
yes,
of these emotions. Can you walk me through kind of that process of kind of, yes, getting yourself from this, you know, very hectic mindset of whatever life is throwing at you, right, yeah, to acknowledging it? So now that you've acknowledged these kinds of heavy emotions,
yes,
can you go from there, how to then simplify it and then on to the next step?
Yes, great question. And really the simplification is, it starts on the training before we feel the emotion. There's all this training that we do beforehand is really the start of that simplification. And, you know, we hear a lot of negative emotions, positive, heavy, happy. The Heart Math Institute, the research that they have been doing for a long time, they're genius in the way that they have described this, because they say, look at emotions as those that deplete your energy and those that renew your energy. And, you know, we're not talking about energy of, you know, kumbaya, all these. It's really, we need energy to talk. We have mitochondria and they're producing ATP. So there's real energy. So when I am in that simplification process and I am feeling that overwhelmed, stressed, angry, then I train myself to go into that simplicity to say, I'm draining my energy. I am draining my energy. And then just by saying that, my voice almost starts to cool down, even if I'm just talking in my head, which I do all the time. And I say, okay, all right, so I feel my energy is very drained, and I almost describe it. And that allows me to really just say, oh yeah, oh, my shoulders are so tight. Man, my neck is killing me. And there's one point that I don't need to describe things anymore because I start feeling a shift. And then I go like, okay, yeah, well, I've had a lot. It's been many days. There's a lot of things going on. However, I have these clients coming. I have this opportunity. I am feeling right. So it's really this simplification of there's emotional states that are going to get me really down, drain my energy. And at the same time, just by acknowledging them and almost describe them briefly, the shift comes natural. So it's almost like we don't need to do something.
Yeah.
One way that I showed my daughter this when she was 8 years old was to say, imagine that once you say, thank you, fear, the fear says, I don't have anything else to say. So that fear then shifts into happiness.
So yeah, you
it's
know,
really that simplification.
That's really cool. Yeah, I actually, so during vet school, I apologize for my mother-in-law's dog barking. in vet school, when, you know, obviously it was a very stressful time and challenging time in everyone's lives when they go through it. When I would have these episodes of panic or stress, what I had to do actually was I had to essentially turn off the lights, whether it's daytime or nighttime, sit in my bed, close my eyes, and like essentially kind of talk myself through it. And, you know, I'm not one who's a very brilliant person. I actually really have to, quote, simplify or dumb things down for myself to understand it, which is also kind of how I then share and, you know, communicate with others. And so whenever I would be feeling a certain way, I would close my eyes and I talk to myself, okay, well, how am I feeling? In like the most simple 3-year-old terms, I feel bad. Okay, well, from there, let's extend that. Let's see what exactly is bad. Oh, I feel stressed. Okay, what are you stressed about? Well, I have this exam and I have, you know, and these people are coming over and I have these things. Okay, well, and then from there, and as you're saying, I then felt better. And now that it's acknowledged, then the next step is, okay, well, you kind of enter that logic state, right? Well, what can you do about these things?
Yes.
Right. Okay, well, I have to take my exam. And what's the worst thing that can happen? Okay, you fail the exam. Do you fail the course? Do you know what are your capabilities? And I kind of then scale it from there and make it a little bit more branched out with my thoughts. So what you're saying, actually, it seems it's really cool because I've had personal experience with just kind of that level of self meditation. And it's for me the only way that I can move forward in events of feeling so bad.
Absolutely. And you're really hitting the nail on the head on this one, Dr. Tam, because if we put the concept of self-esteem, you know, it's like it doesn't matter how much praising and admiration I give to you, because it's your self-esteem. You have to do this.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about emotions, we want to also simplify it to self-regulate. It's not control, it's not domination, it's not push, it's just the simplification of self-regulating allows me, the one that is experiencing those emotions, to self on myself however it suits best. Sometimes, and you know, and a lot of the times this self-talk, it doesn't work. And what it works is that I put my earphones, I put very heavy metal, like the old Metallica, Master of Puppets, something like that, and I go out and I walk, do like if I'm doing air drumming or something, because it's just so much to feel that I'm allowing the body to feel, instead of like, oh yes, you're very overwhelmed, what is happening, like, right? This self-regulation has many faces, but that's the beauty of simplifying something, because when you simplify okay, this is draining my energy, this is renewing my energy, and I can tune down. Then I use my logic and reason to say, okay, I know so many different tools that I can use depending on the situation.
And it seems like from what you're saying too, this is not just a one-time fix-all. This is a constant self-reflection and an identification of yourself, especially as you're changing, right? As you become, if you graduate vet school, or you then become a parent, or a husband, or a wife, or a partner, right? Yes. And so those perspectives have to be shifted. And so, yeah, unfortunately, it's nothing in life that's beautiful and meaningful is easy, right?
Well, that might be another topic for conversation.
Okay.
Because let me just plant a seed there in case other people are might be
so
excited.
You're coming back again, huh?
I'm kind of inviting myself. But to wrap up the simplification part is that in Eastern philosophies, I love about Zen, Buddhism, the Tao, Hinduism, because in those, the core of those philosophies is about don't struggle, go with the flow. It's just like water, just the water is not fighting the rocks. It's just softly going around, and with time, eventually, even the hardest rock is going to smooth out. But then in the more Western side of the world that we grew up with, it's like, no. If you want to go to vet school, you have to make the time. You have to struggle. You have to do this, right? So it's this two concepts that when we bring them together and see them more like, oh yeah, obviously I need to study and challenge myself and I have to spend the time. That doesn't mean that I have to create additional thoughts of, I got to struggle, I got to do, I got to get better grades because they're going to take my spot over clinics, et cetera, et cetera.
I really like that, actually. I think that's something I would love to talk to you about in the future. Eastern versus Western mental health.
Yeah, Eastern and Western.
And Western. All right, Dr. Cruz, yes. Thank you so much for coming back and having this chat with me. It seems like we're going to have you again, which I'm very excited for.
Thank you for taking my self-invitation.
Of course. And you know, this is something that like I really love. It drives a lot of conversation. It drives a lot of kind of thought and helps with people self-reflection. You know, I didn't realize that these were things that I was doing that was very therapeutic for myself. So again, I really appreciate you coming by. Everyone, again, you know, stay tuned for the next episode. We're going to chat about having Dr. Cruz back on board and seeing if we can kind of have having a reoccurring member.
Yeah, absolutely. A series of conversations. I love that. Thank you, Dr. Tam.
Of course.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for having you.
Thank you.